There's a reason why you were chosen to be the parent of these beautiful child. You're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you. And he's helping me as much as I'm helping raise him. I'm like, wow. This little 2-year-old is so wise and doesn't speak that much, but yet his actions speak volumes. You guys as well. I love hearing the father perspective because I just, never really put myself in the dad's shoes as much.
That kind of beauty has been bestowed upon us being parents. We're constantly living our lives in service to the debt that can't be repaid, that we're giving ourselves so fully to our kids and making the sacrifices that we need to give them the life that they deserve.
Being a parent is such an important job. It is a spiritual honor because we're paving the way for the future of our world by raising the future generation. My guests today are not only parents, but also Onronauts and dream lovers.
I'll go first. I was also raised Catholic, so I mean, I really don't know how much dreaming is in the Bible or anything, but I know it wasn't brought up at church or anything. But whenever I would talk about dreaming with my family, they were always like reciprocative and they would talk about it with me. But I want to take that parenting shift, like make a new style where like every morning I ask my toddler, did you dream? Or like, how is it? So make it more of a like a dinner table conversation. My name is Rachel Olson, and I've been lucid dreaming since 2016. And I've just been dreaming my whole life, and I've always been fascinated by it. And I've really taken leaps with my mental health because of it. And I find a lot of insight from my dreams. So I love talking about it. And that's kind of what brought me here.
Like myself too, I was raised Catholic in Colombia. My lucid dreaming, my experiences started also me reading the Bible, seeing all these about dreams and how the Lord take me to the spirit and show me things or whatever. And I remember at age 12, I was doing the same. I was praying for having these experiences, like all these prophets that they did. And I remember staying when I was 12, I was saying, God, I want to experience these things. Please take me in spirit and show me amazing things. And I remember that night I went out of my body and I was seeing these beautiful things that I, you know, it was amazing. So, feeling the vibrations and I knew that was, okay, the guy is talking to me now. So I'm going to just let it be. And I wasn't even afraid because I already knew that I was praying for it. And so I started having those dreams and experiences because I already read the Bible and I felt, okay, this is coming from God, nothing to be afraid of. And that's how my whole thing started for me. And to this day, I'm still passionate about it and exploring and learning new things, getting to know more people like you guys and connecting with everyone. Now, because my mother also understood about lucid dreaming, that helped me learn more new things. And now I'm passing it on to my 10-year-old daughter that she started having lucid dreams when she was 3 years old and having these nightmares. And I'll tell her, when you become aware in your dream, just give a cookie or something to that monster or whatever is scaring you and go back to sleep. And she did that. You know, she was able to become lucid in her dream and give a cookie to the monster or whatever and hug it and became like a teddy bear. And then she went back to sleep. So now that she doesn't have those nightmares anymore. So it's fascinating to pass it on to our next generations and also evolve more our consciousness through our kids, that they're going to become more aware of what is lucid dreaming for, what is astral projection for, rather than not having any understanding. So my name is Jaime Lanquist Munoz, and I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
My name is Steve Ernenwine. I've been lucid dreaming for about 17 and a half years now. Came on by a spontaneous lucid dream that I had that, like, I didn't even know what lucid dreaming was at the time. And it just rocked my world so hard. And I just instantly fell in love and was like, God, I need more of that in my life. It's been a real wild ride. And kind of like what Rachel was saying, I don't even know where I would be right now if my dreams didn't completely intersect my life like that. I also host a podcast. The mission behind that is to kind of tell the stories of how dreams have done that for people, how they have shaped people's lives. Yeah, it feels like my way of giving back and kind of being of service to passing that along. And I'm attempting to do that with my son. I got a 6-year-old son and a 4-month-old daughter. I had a lot of beautiful dreams surrounding him in utero and just every step of the way. forward. And so when Amina threw out the suggestion for anybody who wanted to come in here and share, I was like, yeah, that sounds like where I got to be. So I remember when I first moved in with my partner that I had a series of dreams of us having kids, and we weren't quite there yet. But there was always like an older boy and a younger girl. I mean, both of us always felt like we were going to have a boy first and then a girl second. And so it's just like confirmation, I guess, of intuition and just the way that the dreams have happened for me. I actually had an announcement dream that my son was conceived before Erica even knew that she was pregnant. That dream, I was at a mall with my mother, and I had this little baby boy in my hands, and he was so beautiful. He was real fresh. And I just remember having just the most like beautiful love for him. And literally like 2 weeks later, she was like, I have to tell you something. And she told me, and I'm like, oh, wow. I kind of already knew that was coming. Well, I mean, I didn't know that it was prophetic. So I just thought it was like a beautiful birth dream. But that was like, whoa, okay. And yeah, I probably had, I don't know, five or so dreams during her pregnancy with him where I watched him be born, and they're always in very weird ways. Like he would always be like 2 or 3 months old, and like sometimes he was able to walk and talk already. And I would just sit there and go, oh my God. Like, so I think it was like, as a father, it was like helping to really prepare me for how beautiful and just like how powerful this experience was going to be for me. And I loved having the preparation because, man, the day that she went into labor was absolutely the most terrifying day of my life. He came a whole month early and I was not prepared. So I guess if I could share one dream in particular that happened in utero that I think is really special. At the time, I was out of work while she was pregnant, and it was very hard on her specifically, but also me struggling to find out what am I doing and how can I provide for my kids? And it's a whole story there. It's a very initiatory story for me. It was hardcore. And I was just struggling really hard to know like what I needed to do. And I had this beautiful dream where I went to a hospital and I understood that he was already born. But in waking life, he was only, I don't know, 3 months in and was probably like measuring at like 4 or 6 inches long. And that's how he appeared. There was this little tiny weird incubator that I pulled the drawer out, and he kind of sits up in this weird little fetus form, and he starts talking to me, and he tells me, Dad, I need you to charge at this as if you're on horseback. And it was so powerful for me to hear that. It just like really affirmed for me that the work that I was doing and the initiatory place that I was in, like I really needed to give everything that I had at it, because this was preparing me to be the man that I needed to be for him. Everybody in my life was telling me I was an idiot. So for him to like come to me in the dream and be like, no, I like need you to do this, because if you don't do this, you're not going to become the man that like I need you to be for me. Long story short, I did come out of that. It was a big death, and there was a very beautiful like path of rebuilding after that. But yeah, that's one of the more like beautiful and like tender experiences I had during him being in utero, dreaming with him. To feel like I got a message from his soul like that, I cherish that so deeply. So I think fathers in general, we don't have many ceremonies surrounding fatherhood. And I was feeling that really deeply at the time. Like the experience of like becoming a father kind of shapes you in itself, but there wasn't much community around it. It wasn't like I had other fathers who were like trying to take me out and like celebrate the fact that that was the case. I had this really beautiful procession of dreams that I feel like did that for me. The first one started almost a perfect month before Luca was born. It was a dream where I was in my parents' house that I mostly grew up in, and my grandfather was there and we were having dinner, and he stands up and he tells everybody that he was pretty sure that he was dying 2 days ago and that he's expecting to die any day now. And there was this big moment of everybody kind of being like, oh, damn. And we all toasted to him and gave him this really beautiful honor. And the dream ended. And I was like, oh God, what does that mean? My grandfather's going to die? Like, he's my last living grandfather. Then literally 2.5 weeks later, I have another one where what feels like he does like a conference call where he calls everybody in our family and he's telling us all that he's on his last breath. And I wake up just like, what is happening right now? Like, this is starting to make me really consider that maybe this is prophetic. And then 4 days later, I have this really beautiful, beautiful dream where I'm at a bar and I'm being celebrated by my mom and a couple dream characters that I don't know. And none other than Robert Moss was there also. The three of them blindfold me and they start creating this herbal concoction in this mason jar. And they take the thing off and they pour it over my head. And it just feels like cleansing and healing and purifying in some beautiful way. And then Robert stands before me and he gives me this incredibly beautiful hug. He just lingers there for a very long time. And it feels so fatherly. It feels so welcoming, like he's welcoming me into fatherhood. Like, it felt like it was just this absolutely gorgeous welcome. As we're embracing, he's whispering in my ear and he says to me, I heard that your grandfather passed and I give you my condolences. I thank him for that. And he, after the hug, he stands back and he very fatherly, like, grabs me by the shoulders and he's looking me right in the face and he's like, and happy birthday to you. And the dream ends. And I was just like, holy cow. So now my grandfather's dead. And so the way I started looking at that, he's still alive, by the way. So it wasn't prophetic. It was very much symbolic of like, he's the last great patriarch in my family. And it just felt like it was this beautiful symbolic way of him passing the torch to me. Like, now I have to be in his shoes. Like, I have to create my own legacy. I just thought that was immensely beautiful. And for Robert to wish me happy birthday was like, oh, this is me being born as a father. This is like a death and a rebirth moment for me where I'm being welcomed into this fatherhood. Yeah, it was really, really special. And Luca was literally born, I think, within 6 days after that dream, 4 weeks early. And so it was like the dream knew that this was coming more than I did. Yeah, I just really, really cherished that. And I wanted something similar to that when my daughter was just born this last fall, but it didn't happen. And I think partly because it would have taken away from the fact that that was my introduction to fatherhood, and to have another experience like that would have maybe not been as potent or appropriate. I don't know.
I don't think about that happening. Like, the women, we get baby showers and everything, yeah. And the dads are just kind of on the side. So, wow, that was really beautiful, though, to hear and how that torch was passed down to you. That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, and that was very nurturing that Robert Moss gave you a hug and welcomed you into fatherhood, because Robert Moss is my teacher now.
Oh, yeah?
Taking a class from him, yeah. And I love it, you know, because this is so entangle, you know, these dreams and how we are connected. Everything evolves in a certain way that it's for the good of us, and an awakening of who we are and what we can also become. So, and not that someone tells us we are this, but our essence knows what it is and who it is. And you became a father, you already knew that, you know, you had that dream, and it was an amazing story. So I thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I have a 2-year-old. He just turned 2 March 5th. So he's 2 years and a month. And I was just talking to my sister about how quick my labor was. Was just because she works in like the health field. So she's done plenty of research, where I kind of went into it like, this is my experience. I'm only going to focus on me. So I didn't really know what the typical woman in labor was or anything. So I thought, oh, that was just my experience. But like this past few weeks, I'm really looking at, wow, my labor was only like 2.5 hours. Like, I had contractions and they were coming pretty quick. And I'm just like, oh, like, this is going to be a while. And then I went to my midwife and I was supposed to do a water birth. But when I arrived, it was way too late. She's like, oh, it's time. And I'm like, what? So I went on the bed, and within like an hour and a half, my son was born. And it was really cool too. My water never broke until his head came out. And then, so he was in the water sack the whole way through. And my midwife was saying how hydrated I was. And you're like, oh, you drank so much water. But I really attribute a lot to my lucid dreaming preparation ahead of time. I had several labor dreams where I was doing the breathing techniques. A couple of dreams I would rewind and have the baby again. So I felt like it wasn't my first experience, although in the real world, it was my first time having a baby. But yeah, I had rapid labor and I didn't really realize it until recently. I just took a step back and was like, wow, I have to give myself more credit for my lucid dreams or even just the dreaming in general. The hormones released when you're pregnant also give you like benefit of longer dream, more vividness, more recall. So I had that as well. Not only was I trying to practice it, I was also having like those soul connections with my son before he was born. I actually knew he was a boy before we could even tell. So I knew I was pregnant and I was like, oh God, there was a one night kind of stand. Me and his father are in a good relationship now, but I was not wanting to have a baby. But when I found out I was pregnant, I was so excited because I've always wanted to be a mom. And it's been a great experience this whole time. I remember being scared, you know, nervous at first, but all my dreams grounded me and brought me back because it was all unconditional love. The feelings I felt were like nothing I've ever experienced before. A couple of weeks into my pregnancy, there was a balloon. It was like a very eerie, dark dream, but then out of nowhere was a bright red balloon and it said, it's a boy on it. And I just remember being so calm. So I just kind of took the dream setting as my emotions of insecurities, uncertainty, but yet this red balloon that said it's a boy just gave me like the feeling of warmth and it wrapped me up like a blanket. And I just remember from that moment that pivoted all my dreams the rest of the 9 months. And I was listening to an Audible book the other day and I called my sister and I was just like, by the way, it was my lucid dreams that helped me with my quick labor. So whenever you and your husband are ready to have kids, I'll teach you some tricks how to lucid dream and you'll be just as fine like me. So if I have another kid, I'm excited to see how quick I can pop that one out. I'm just like thrown back sometimes by the power of your dreams and how like it all connects all of us. And I felt connected to my son the moment I knew. Some of the pregnancy videos I'd subscribed to, they're all like meditation or like being able to like still your mind. And the thoughts of animals giving birth really gave me peace. I'm like, if a horse can push out like a little calf horse like that, I can do it too. I'm a mammal. Like I got the relaxing like in me that will release. I just had to like trust my body and knew that this is what we were built for. But the lucid dreaming definitely was my backbone the whole time.
How similar was real birth to dream birth?
Looking back, it's the same as remembering a dream. But in the moment, it was like, oh shit, it's happening.
What I love about Rachel and what she was saying is how lucid dreaming helped her rehearsal this, what was coming, you know, this miracle, and how it helped her prepare for this. So that's one thing about I love about lucid dreaming and astral projection is how you can rehearse something in there and then bring in the non-physical and then bring it into the physical world.
Yeah, I feel like if you do dream about your kids beforehand, you do pretty much get a clue on whether they're boy or girl. And I think the mother intuitively has a really good gauge on what she's feeling about it. Like I had that announcement dream and then we had several dreams about little girls before Mila came around. And I mean, if the body's connected to the psyche, which it is, it should know.
Yes, we are connected energetically. So with the universe, so all those things will happen eventually. Well, I was smiling when you were sharing your story, Stephen, because when you mentioned about the hospital, I was like, yes, I had that dream. You know, I always thought, okay, I would like to be a parent, you know, that would be great. And then I had this dream where I saw myself in a hospital and I see this man dressed in white and like a doctor and takes me flying into the nurse station. And these two nurses, they hand me a baby. They hand me out a baby. And so I grabbed this baby And that was it. Then I woke up. Then I told my husband, we're going to be parents. We're going to be parents. And he looks at me and says, how is that possible? How is that going to be? And I said, I don't know, but I dreamt about that we're going to be parents. The next day, I pray. I said, Lord, we're going to be parents, give me confirmation. And I had the same dream. This man in white took me again to this hospital where the nurses were and hand me a baby. And I woke up and I told my husband, we're going to be parents. Start saving money because we are going to be parents. And within 3 weeks or so, I started on my work. I got to work with this lady that she works at night and I work at the daytime. She knew about me. I knew about her, but we never met before. And then when I was talking to her, she told me she had 3 kids already. And she asked me if I had any kids. And I said, no, I'm in a same-sex relationship. I don't think we can have babies. And she laughed. And I noticed a shift in her body, energy and all stuff. And she looked at me in my eyes and said, you know, I always wanted to be a surrogate mother for a gay couple. And I knew right away that that was coming from up there somewhere. The source, God, the universe, it was right there putting me this lady. I just felt it. I felt it. She felt it. I felt the energy. And I go, man, this got to be from the Holy Ghost, it's Holy Spirit, whatever it is. But I'm feeling it. One thing led to another one. And Mother's Day came. And then I got this call from her. We got the call. And she said, guess what? We're pregnant. And that's how it happened. Then we got 10 years later, we got Margaret, mm-hmm. my little Margaret. Not only that, but when she was 2.5 years old, she, when we were going to put her to bed after reading her book, she looked at me and my husband, Bill, and said to us so clearly that she came from far, far away. She passed the moon, the stars, and the sun. And we never told her that. And she said, and I picked you as my parents.
Oh, I'm going to cry.
Me too.
That's so cute.
I picked you as my parents. And we got the shields. My husband started crying and thanking her. And then she said that there are others waiting to come to Earth. Mm-hmm. And they're picking up their parents. And I tell you, we were so happy. And I knew that my dream was guided. I told Bill, this dream is announcing me that they're sending a very special spirit to us to handle, because it's a very powerful spirit. And of course, he believes in my dreams because he knows me. I'm a dreamer. I'm a lucid dreamer. When I talk about my dreams, they usually come to pass. So we did put the money away. All this happened, and here we are. And only that, but many things happened. Like, she would come into my dreams and would tell me when she was a baby that she would slap me in the face and said, change my diaper. I wake up, and I need to go and change her diaper at 2 or 3 in the morning. She will speak to us telepathically. Even to my husband, he was thinking about buying something. And then he'll hear this voice in his head, like, buy it. But she was like, only like, maybe at the time it was like 6 months or something, but he could hear her. They could communicate. And I remember one night I was caroling with her to put her on the cradle. It was probably around 12 at night and I was falling asleep. And you know that donut that you put around to hold the baby? And then I remember getting out of my body with her in my arms. And I walked to my bedroom and I saw my husband sleeping. And then I turned around and I saw myself in the rocking chair with my baby. But when I looked, there were all these tiny like chakras illuminating our whole body and hers. And suddenly I felt this connection with her, that she was connecting her energy, her chakras, whatever, with mine. And suddenly I felt in my solar plexus this energy like boom, like this bounding, parent and daughter with the child, the bounding. And when I woke up, I felt like she punched me in the gut. But wow. That was energetically. And then I knew that we were bonding. spiritually, energetically, and physically. Mm-hmm. And then I told my husband that in the morning. I said, now I understand how the mother bonds with the baby. They connect with the baby because I felt it. And then it was his turn. Then he felt the same thing too. He was putting her to bed or something. He was rocking her. And then he felt the same thing that I told him. And then I told him, well, now we are connected as a family. Yeah. And that's how it happened. Yep.
That's beautiful.
That is really beautiful.
Wow.
This connection with parents and children, it's amazing when you are aware of it, when you have that awareness and the understanding. Because it's, you know, if you do understand this, how we connect with our children and the children with parents, then we have a much better relationship with our children.
It's crazy. Children are such like spiritual, innocent beings. You know, they're so connected to the spiritual world. It kind of like brings us to that greater awareness. And that's why I called this conscious parenting.
Yeah. Thank you, Jaime. That was so gorgeous. I think it can be difficult for fathers to know. It's pretty understood, the bond that happens between a mother and a child. It's so physical and deeply emotional. And I think it can be hard for men to know how to make that connection. And I just thought your story was absolutely beautiful for that. Man, that's,
yeah,
I love it.
And that's very funny because my daughter, sometimes she looks at me and goes, you're my mama. This girl, she's very, very awake, very alert. She's very, in fact, when she was about 3 and I was driving her to kindergarten, learning Spanish, she told me in the car, she was in the back, and she said to me, oh, Papa Jaime, I am out of my spirit. And I said, what were you talking about? And she said, yes, I see a rainbow. And I said, really, you see a rainbow? She said, yeah, I see these colors, like rainbow. And I said, okay. And she said, looked at her, and she said, that's me. I am a rainbow spirit. And I was like, what? I didn't even know what rainbow spirit is. So I go home, of course, Google it, rainbow children or whatever. And of course, there is rainbow children. I didn't even know that. I know about indigo. I know about crystal children. But I didn't know about rainbow until now because she told me. And she said that she's a rainbow spirit. And she's here to save us all. And I'm like, okay. Okay.
Thanks, Margaret.
3 years old.
Thank you, Margaret.
So cute.
3 year old. How did she know these things? And one time I asked her, Margaret, how did you get this information? Where does it come from? And she looks at me and said, from the back of my head, I have a library.
Yep.
And when I want something, I pull out information from there. And I say, oh, must be the Akashi records that she has access to.
Mm-hmm. I've had a dream about that library in my head too. And I was like, it's been here the whole time. And he's like, yep. The whole time.
Yes. Cool. And there are times that she'll dream about that she's an eagle and that she's flying to the sun. And then she can see things there. When she becomes an eagle, she can go and see things.
Wow.
As an eagle. So I'm like, so I write all that down and I try to teach her to keep a journal and things like that. But if we don't keep our children nurturing these dreams and teaching them about writing the journals, then it kind of dies out as we grow up. Because I remember that how creative and how vivid dreams I was having when I was a child. And if you don't continue with the practice, then you start saying, oh, I don't remember this. I don't remember the dreams anymore. So it's very important to be cultivating these dreams, abilities to our children.
How do you incorporate that into like your just family day so that they grow up cherishing these things and not like, you know, forget about it? And of course, life gets in the way and then they become teenagers and you can only do so much there. But, you know, instilling something in them to be consciously aware.
The way I do it is I'm constantly reading books about lucid dreaming, astral projection, and I'm also in front of her. I don't tell her write or anything. I just write myself on the book and my journal. And what are you doing? I'm writing my dreams. Mm-hmm. What are you doing, Papa? I'm reading a book on lucid dreaming. Mm-hmm. So she knows the words that incorporated there. when I wake up in the mornings, I do ask her, like you, Rachel, how's your dreams? Do you have any dreams? And then we talk about them. So I know that if I incorporate that in my everyday life, then she will not forget it because it's part of her upbringing. Mm-hmm. Like it was for me when I was growing up with my mother, that when I was 12 years old and even smaller, that's all I knew. Until now, still, this is all I know. So I can incorporate the same thing with my daughter, that is part of her, it's part of her life. Lucid dreaming, astroplasty is so normal to her that, you know, it's just part of who she is. So I think that's one of the things that we as parents can do with our children is always mentioning it, talking about it, and make it part of their own life. Because our children are more advanced now. They are coming with more pure essence and more awareness, more wisdom, more knowledge, they're more light. And we need to, we as parents, that these children come to us, we need to make sure that that light that they come with is still as bright as the universe. Mm-hmm. Because their light does they not dim, and then they won't be able to continue with their purpose, that why they're here and why they choose us as parents. Our job is to cultivate their light and to help them understand who they are and how strong and powerful they are. Because they are the future of the world now to make it better.
Yeah.
And that's what I get. I get when I'm meditating, this is the stuff I get. Mm-hmm. How to raise my child.
So my son and I, we still co-sleep. Yeah, where he'll fall asleep in his bed or go into mine. I might move him. But there was like a 2-week gap where he was sleeping in his own bed. And then we just swapped right back. And when we did that swap back about, I think, 2 months ago, now he's very particular on how he wants like me to hold him when he falls asleep. And it almost like brought on like a spiritual shift. I'll ask him like, oh, do you want to dream share tonight? So I'll ask if he dreamed when he woke up, and now I'm trying to talk about it when we're going to sleep. Like, I'll see you in our dreams, or what do you want to dream about? You want to go to the zoo? And we'll just kind of talk, but he'll put his forehead right next to mine. So it's like our third eyes are just like right there. And then he has to pull my arm and I have to hold him. So it's so sweet because I like to sleep on my back. And then I'm like, okay, just till he falls asleep, I have to like go on my side. So I hold him because I can't like hold him like this. It gets awkward. When he put his forehead against mine, it was like almost he was leading the like nighttime routine. And I was like, whoa, what are you doing? He was like, and then he would fall asleep within like a couple minutes. And now we do it almost every single night. And the second our foreheads touch, it's like, I know he's going to be out in a couple minutes. And then after that, once he's asleep, then I'll go on my back and then, you know, the next morning I'll ask him a few dreams. But since like the past couple months, our dreams together have increased and I always have him in my dreams, but now he's more of like my sidekick a bit more. So I think maybe he's realizing he's like dreaming, like this is not just, I don't know, when he was a baby, he would always put in place baby. We'd have some dreams like zombie apocalypse dreams or something. I would always have to worry about carrying him or like putting him like on a sling and running with him, where now the dreams, he's like, come on. Or he's all, shh. I'm like, what? Like, how are you dream leading now? So I just kind of feel like he's getting it. He can't talk verbally as much as like what he's dreaming, but I'm getting the signs that he's understanding it more. And it's really neat because, yeah, there was this police raider dream the other night and I'm like, be quiet. Like, oh no, like they're going to hear us. And then he's all, come on. And then just, I don't know, just completely like leading the dream. And I'm just like, wow, this is a new dream baby, the baby boy.
The growth in the dream world and in the real world. I love that. Nice.
And when I was pregnant too, I felt like that spiritual, like that line of communication with him. One, like about second trimester, I felt like he was giving me meal orders. Our dream about like lime juice or lemon juice was like a big one, and strawberries. I felt like I woke up and I knew what he wanted me to eat for the day, or like asparagus. And I would Google asparagus and like the benefits for pregnancy, find out it's full of folic acid and it helps like the baby's development. And it was right on track for his development. And I'm like, how do you know this? Wow. I'm like, what? I don't normally eat these foods. Like, I love strawberries and fruit, but like the asparagus is usually if someone else cooks it. So that's when I started cooking asparagus more for myself. And I just felt like he was like, oh, I want this or this. And it was never really any processed food. It was always whole vegetables, fruits, or like Ethiopian food or Thai food. I would crave a lot too. And spicy food. He loves spicy, like hot. Flamin' hot Cheetos. He'll eat those all the time. Great baby. <laughs> Wow, that's very interesting, Rachel,
because my husband was having those same, he says he doesn't dream very much, but he was having those dreams about the food to feed the surrogate mother. And he was going, and he was seeing in his dream a bag of avocados, blueberries, strawberries, spinach, asparagus, and all these greens. And then we'll go grocery shopping and send and give it to her. And he'll say, please have this because we are not a very healthy baby.
Right. Like the baby wants. Yeah, the food tastes so good too. It's just like the food you're craving when you eat it. It's like, wow. Yeah. And I ended up getting COVID my third trimester and I lost my sense of smell. And it's like slowly but surely still coming back. But I couldn't smell for like 8-9 months. Like when he was born, I couldn't smell him or anything. So it took a while to come back, but it did. But I tried to trigger everything. So I was eating like the flaming, the spicy chicken from Kiki's Chicken down the street that like you have to sign a waiver for, like all this stuff, trying to like somehow trigger it back. And no, nothing. And then once my smell came back, I don't have the tolerance for spicy food. I still love spicy food, but not like that. Red hot, like mango habanero, like everything, like the blazing wings from Buffalo Wild Wings had no effect. Like my eyes were watering, but I'm like, I can still eat it. Where now I have to stop and drink water. So I really think he took on that because that third trimester, I had no ceiling for spicy food. And I was trying to.
Pandemic babies are built different, they say.
he's definitely a COVID quarantine baby because it was when the bars got open up and me and my friend went out and then got conceived a baby that night. But he's the best blessing I never thought I needed. How you're saying they pick you, just I have to remember that more because it was just the divine timing. Like he picked me and we have a great life. Like we have so much fun together. And that was another prominent dream that I'd have a lot when I was pregnant is we were just giggling. Like we almost just like the whole dream, we were just like, hee, 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 like giggling, smiling the whole time. Like almost wouldn't make sense. But now that we've had 2 years together, I'm like, that's all we do is giggle. Like we just laugh and have a good time. And we do tickle fights like all day. And it's just really beautiful to kind of see that. Yeah. Like we're cultivating this dream culture within our children and we're paving the road for their future. I love this so much.
I remember when we first, I think it was when he was a baby, when we last had a, we came on the podcast last and I remember you telling me how happy and giggly baby he was.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny. When Erica was pregnant with Luca, her mom actually gifted her a cup because that's all she heard the whole pregnancy was like, it was so delicious. So her mom bought her this coffee cup that said something about everything tasting delicious. That was so funny. She would make something. She'd be like, and oh my God, it was just so delicious. That was like a mantra that just kept coming out of her mouth. It was so funny. But for me, I've been trying not to badger him. I've been trying to let him kind of come to dreams on his own. Like I'll kind of like what Jaime was saying, constantly just putting it out there loosely and just living my life in a way that he knows that I am very much into it. And yeah, so I'll ask him each morning if he remembers any, and oftentimes he doesn't. He gets woken up kind of rudely. Not very good for, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, not good for recall.
Exactly. But every so often he will. And I had this really beautiful moment one time where he had woken up from a nightmare, and the next morning he told me he didn't remember it, but I kind of was like, I kind of feel like you might have. And so I had a nightmare that night, and I got smart in the moment and was like, maybe if I share my nightmare with him, maybe he'll see that it's more of a human thing and it's not something that's scary and exclusive for him. And so I did. And you could just tell, you could see a shift in him immediately. And then all of a sudden he remembered it and he shared it with me. And it made me realize that the kind of vulnerability to feel comfortable sharing those kind of things, if I'm not willing to do it myself with him and to kind of normalize it for him, he may not be as willing to share with me those kind of moments. I took this ancestry course last fall. Part of it was they encourage you to build an altar for your ancestor work. And so I built one in the backyard and he helped me with it. And it was really, really cool. And he had a dream sometime after that where he said that he was in the front, he was in the on the street in front of our house and he found a bunch of food and he wanted to bring it back there. And that it had moved. It was in a different place than where we had built it. Yeah, he said it was moved. I have a friend of mine who's a really awesome dream worker, and she wrote this paper one time on kind of psychogeography and how landscapes in our dreams, if they're familiar places to us and something's a little different, that they might hold something for you. And so I walked out there just to see in the place that he said it was, like what would be there and if there was anything that I'm not thinking of that is there in that position. And when I got back out there, there's an old door from our house that was leaning up against the side of our garage where he said it was. And I was like, there's a doorway here. There's an opportunity for him to explore. And I was like, oh man. And it's nothing that I'm pushing on him, but to see that process happening for him is really, really cool. Cause I don't want it to become a thing where like I'm badgering him or he uses that as an act of defiance to not be a dreamer because dad tried to push it on him. Like, I don't want to be that dad who's like, no, you got to be a dreamer. So I'm just trying to like wade in it and just to lead by example. That's kind of where I stand with all that.
I was thinking lead by example when Jaime was saying, like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm writing in my dream journal. What are you doing? Oh, I'm reading a lucid dreaming book rather than shoving it in their face. Cause I'm like, yeah. I got to let Theodore choose his own path, but I'm ready to help him with a YouTube channel or anything he wants to share the dreams with anyone. I'm like, I want to do children's lucid dreaming books and he's my inspiration. And whether he dreams and chooses to make it, you know, part of his dream work, which I think he will, because I don't know anyone who doesn't dream why you wouldn't want to.
Yeah, it's like, who wouldn't, right? And it's kind of thing, like a lot of people dream. And even if you don't, you probably just don't remember it. And so mm-hmm. It's cool, you know, to have parents like y'all understanding a basis of it and just seeing it growing up, even if it's not like an immediate raging passion of theirs, they're going to always know like the basics and understand what mm-hmm. dream work is versus these things that like I had to kind of figure out on my own. And when I was having nightmares, there was nobody to tell me like, hey, that's normal. Like we can do this. Right. We can dream together. I do have a 11 year old brother though. And I always talk about dreams. So he kind of knows when he has a cool dream, like, oh, let me go tell Amina this, you know, he kind of knows like where to go when he wants to talk about a dream. So it's kind of like providing that I think is also just really powerful.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things too, that I notice is for me is when I want to teach her about reality checks, I make it fun. She sees me jumping or pretending like I'm going through the wall or something. She goes, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm playing reality checks. Oh, so she wants that. To play. Oh, there you go. Reality check.
There's am a reality dreaming? Check, right?
Is this real?
We're not doing
exactly. To, you know, she sees me doing things like, what are you doing, Papa? I mean, I say, I am doing my reality checks. So I make it fun with her. I start playing with her. I say, you help me do a reality check. And we start like playing like this and, you know, things like that. And if you make it playful, then they will also participate.
Hmm.
I'm going to start doing that, definitely. Because I'll do it
mindful. That's awesome.
Like checks, and that's not out loud. It's not verbal. So that's something mm-hmm. I'm going to definitely start doing with him. He loves to jump. So we jump.
Exactly. Jumping.
We fall for the floor.
It's a good idea. Like if I'm dreaming, I'll fly. Oh, guess I'm not.
So make it playful. Idea. We because a lot of people get very serious about this practice that they take the fun of it. And then they become too serious. This practice is just to have fun with, and we're explorers, as Steven said, exploring. And one of my dreams that I had, that I became awake and alert, and my inquiry before that dream was that I wanted to know why lucid dreaming and why astral projection. And then I remember waking up in my dream and into this astral school. And I see this guy wearing this tunic and looked at me and said, "You have a question for me?" And I said, I remember right away my question. And I said, "What is lucid dreaming and astral projection for?" And he grabbed my hand, looked at my eyes, smiled, and said, "To explore. Go and explore and have fun with it." So when I woke up, I was like excited, so excited because I had my answer. So now I make it more playful, more exciting. And I noticed that my lucid dreams and astral projection have become more vivid, my experiences. And I go to sleep with more excitement that I'm going to experience something amazing. Mm-hmm. So that's what keeps me going with my practice. Because some other people, they get bored with it and they don't practice anymore. And because they don't feel like they're not going anywhere. And so if you're one of those that are getting bored about the practice of lucid dreaming, sometimes it's the need of studying more, reading more books, participating in these chats like this, mm-hmm. and getting yourself motivated to continue the practice so you don't get bored. And also learn from teachers. Take classes from lucid dreaming teachers like Robert Moss, William Bullman. There's so many teachers out there now. Charlie Morley, Jay Shah. You probably know these people, but Lana, you know, and that will keep you motivated to continue your education and your and the evolution of consciousness. So that's one of the things that I've been doing to keep myself motivating this practice.
I got a question for you guys because I'm curious to see how this works for you. Do you have any examples of how your dreams have aided you now that you've become a parent?
Yes, for me, I'm becoming more patient. Mm-hmm. And I'm becoming more attentive and being more present. So I am learning from her to how to communicate better, how to become a better reader. Because when she's reading, Papa Jaime has got to get a book too about dreams or out of body experiences. And I carry my books everywhere where I go because she's very good at reading. So I notice a shift in me too. Mostly it's in my waking life.
Yeah.
But she is in my dreams. She does go in my dreams, and I'm doing things with her in my dreams. So I know that we're connected. Mm-hmm. And in my dreams, she'll be doing something that perhaps she's giving me an example of how to do something. It answers your question that way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
The dreams that I have with Theodore, I just feel like we're constantly working together. It's like us against the world, yeah. Like not against it, but like it's us to work together as a team. Like we're a family, we're one unit. Like I just... in real life, in the waking world, he makes a mess. I'm like, it's okay. Like we all make messes. It's fine. Like I've never been like a short fused parent. And like that whole saying, it's just spilt milk. He spilled so much milk and he'll get upset. And he'll like be sad that he dropped it. And I just am like, it's okay. Let's take a moment. Cause like the dreams that I have are always adventurous. Like trying to accomplish something or like trying to like Indiana Jones style, like ruins. Like it's just very picturesque, like of a very cinematic, I would say. But mm-hmm. with my son, it just always kind of reminds me, like no matter what challenge we face, we're going to get through it. And yeah. I think that helps translate a lot of stress that happens in the real world is it's nothing that we can't handle. So I think that really mm-hmm. brings me back to being patient, like knowing that we can get through it, whatever it is. Or
and I love about that milk spill because I used to get upset with my daughter when she spilled the milk. Yeah, and one time she said to me, "Don't cry over spilled milk." Mm-hmm. And it brought me right into awareness.
Yeah.
And I stopped crying about spilled milk. Or when yep. she'll be painting and it'll paint my windows or my frames, and I'll be like, "Margaret," and she'll mm-hmm. say, "Papa Jaime, I am going to be a scientist. Don't overshadow me about that." And she'll go back and clean it up. So I'm yeah, like, I feel okay, like, all right.
Little stinker.
Yep. Theodore draws over all the cabinets and I'm just like looking at him like, okay, yep, I'll get the magic eraser later.
Yeah, but I'm learning that the kids there now, they make this mess because they're exploring. You know, they're also right. exploring. They're adventurous. Like you say, mm-hmm. Rachel, you know, you're adventurous, you're an explorer. So are the kids. Right. The kids are exploring their environment.
Right. Like they're just
trying to see
how much toilet paper will come off the roll.
As we are in lucid dreaming, you know, we're also. Yes.
It's for science. Okay. Like, yeah.
Science.
I think it's really beautiful as a single mom, the fact that your dreams are like that. I think that's such a beautiful show for the relationship you have with him, but also like I can't imagine that's easy at all. And to have dreams like that feel like a huge kind of encouragement or like wind behind you.
He really makes it easy. Like I hear other single mom stories and I'm like, I got plenty to stress about, but I'm like, I got more to be blessed for. So like that outweighs any negative or stresses. So that helps a lot with like the strength because it's, you can easily bring yourself down, but you can as quickly bring yourself back up. And that's where I try to remind myself is just when I feel weak, I look at him and I'm like recharged.
Well, there's a reason why you were chosen to be the parent of these beautiful child. So you're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you. And he's helping me as much as I'm helping raise him. I'm like, wow. Like this little 2-year-old is so wise and doesn't speak that much, but yet his actions speak volumes. And that's what I hear.
Exactly.
You guys as well. I love hearing the father perspective because I just, never really put myself in the dad's shoes as much as I had today. Like even just the hour being on.
It's hard. It's hard because I'm a homestay dad for the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been very hard for me because I want to be out there working and doing this, but I sold my business just to stay at home with my daughter.
Well, that actually ties in pretty awesome for what I could say about how dreams have helped me. It probably was about a year into Luca being born. Had a lot of themes about the sacrificial father. I always kind of struggled with that notion growing up, seeing my parents like forego so much of themselves to like help me and my brother. So I like had a weird story about sacrificing as a parent and sacrificing too much. I had this one dream in particular that I'll share. I think it really shows like the true heart of a parent in a really beautiful way. I don't know. Like I said, I was in a really bad place when Luca was coming around and was finding myself in a better place within the first year that he was born. I kind of was resisting fatherhood really hard at first. Like I was all for it, but at the same time, like that first year is a beast. I'm going through it again right now. And I'm like, oh my God, like I forgot, like every month, like is a whole new milestone and a whole new set of like parameters that you have to like, adhere to. Now the baby's rolling over. Is she going to suffocate? Like there's just like so much. And then all of a sudden she's crawling and you got to be worried about all this. And it's just like one thing after another. And I was just like, oh my God, this is so much more work than I thought it was going to be. But about a year in, I think I had been through the fire enough to where I was finally starting to be able to stand on my feet a little bit.
Fireproof.
Exactly. And so I started having these really beautiful dreams that there was a shift that was happening within me and the father archetype within me, and started having these really beautiful examples of like the height of what the father archetype could express itself within me. And it was really, really something. And a lot of it had to do around sacrifice. And I was really perplexed about it at first. And I had this one dream where I was in a hallway and there were two men just ahead of me. I decided to act like I was doing something so I could eavesdrop on their conversation. And the two men were talking about being fathers. And the one told this really beautiful story of how he mines diamonds. And he said he works really hard to mine these diamonds for his daughter. And he reaches in his pockets and he shows the man what he leaves for himself. And it's just like paper scraps and lint and basically nothing. But the essence that comes across when he's saying this is so powerful and it's so selfless. It's so completely selfless that he doesn't feel diminished by it. Like the sacrifice that he's making is not a diminishing thing. It doesn't take anything away from him. It actually is like an overflowing from him. There's nothing else that he could do. Nothing greater that he could do than to give himself so fully. I was so touched by that dream. And I was reading this beautiful book by this dream worker named Tokopa Turner. And the book is called Belonging. It's a really beautiful book. Encourage anybody to read it. That like 2 days later, I was on this part in the book where she's talking about living your life as payment to the debt that can't be repaid. The debt of beauty that you've been given in your life, like to live yourself or to live your life in service of attempting to pay that back, even though it's basically impossible. And I was just like, that's what parental sacrifice is. We are indebted with such that kind of beauty has been bestowed upon us being parents. We're constantly living our lives in service to the debt that can't be repaid, that we're giving ourselves so fully to our kids and making the sacrifices that we need to give them the life that they deserve repaid, that we're giving ourselves so fully to our kids and making the sacrifices that we need to give them the life that they deserve in a way that there's nothing else that we can do. And it isn't a diminishing thing. It isn't overflowing. There's so much love inside of my being that I can't help but spill that completely into his life. Yeah, there were so many dreams like that were showing me examples of what I could be as a father. And yeah, it was just absolutely gorgeous in so many cool ways that continues to happen now.
When we feel that way, as you say, you know, your heart can become so big. Also, our heart lights up this beautiful being of light that the universe, the source, can see that speckle of light here is connected to the universe, and they can see that bright light inside of us. So that's how we connect with the source too.
Yeah.
So by you feeling that way, you're connecting with the source through your child. That's the way I see it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And when you're telling your story, I can see you beaming of light. When you're telling the story, you're lighting up. You know, I see this pure light, pure essence. You go to zero, which zero is your essence, yourself. You're expressing something that you are already, pure love, manifesting through your child. Yeah, that's what I see. This is wonderful, you know, how our children help us come back into ourselves, into who we are. So we understand more of how we can be of service to others with that same kind of love for a child or children. We can apply the same love towards another person, embracing and loving that person as your child.
Right. That makes me, since becoming a mom now, any movie I watch, like I was rewatching Home Alone during Christmas, and I've never cried during Home Alone except this year when the mom went back to, you know, meet up with the boy, and she's like, "I'm sorry I left you," and I'm just like, "Oh my god!"
All movies are different now.
It's totally different, and now anytime I see that connection, it just like an iron hitting rod. I don't know. It just hits me so like profoundly, and I never had that experience of love before, and now it's like never ending, overpouring. And like I had a pregnancy scare just like this past year, and I was like, oh my gosh, am I gonna have another kid? And all I could think of was, yeah, I got enough love, like I could have a bunch of kids. And I still want to have kids one day. I wasn't, but it just made me think like, wow, I have all this love I can give. And I didn't know that until I became a mom. And that's when it really resonated, woke me up. Like, wow, it was just beautiful. And now I can see that with other kids and like just other parents and like the videos online, like of a dad taught his kid how to ride a bike. And I started tearing up watching that. And I'm just like, all these moments I've already experienced or I'm looking forward to. And it's just, I'm only 2 years, you know, into being a mom. And I'm just like, my whole life, this is what I was born to do.
Yeah. It makes you a total mush. Absolutely.
Yeah. Total mush. Like it's so happy all the time.
Like I was watching the movie, Christmas Chronicles with my family at Christmas a couple of years ago when it first came out. And the part at the end when Santa gives, the deceased dad's son a gift where he could see his dad one more time, and his dad said he's proud of him. I was just like, oh, God, Jesus Christ. And my sister-in-law looked next to me and was like, what is wrong with you? Like, I'm like, I cannot do dad movies, like, especially if, like, the dad is dead or dies or, like, oh, my God, it just cuts way too deep. And
right.
The thing that was really cool was, so all my family lives, I live in Minnesota, all my family lives out in the East Coast. When my son was 7 months old, we took him out for my parents' birthdays, and they had this big party. All the family was there, and I got to introduce my son to my whole family. It was so unbelievable to like be received by the men in my family the way that I did. You could just tell that they welcomed me into fatherhood in that moment. Yeah. So like I said, I didn't have that prior to him being born, but going out there was like, oh my God, this is like what I wanted. And to see all my relatives now knowing what I hold in my heart, you could see it in them. And I was like, I can't believe how oblivious I've been my whole life to the capacity that these human beings in my life have had all along. And yeah, it's really something.
And how much in touch with our emotions we become too, and with ourselves. So connected. They help us connect ourselves with who we are.
Well, the other part of that too that I think is funny is that I'll meet men who seem kind of rugged and closed off. As soon as they find out that I'm a father, it's like they know they can level with me in a certain way where they're like, oh my God, let's gush about kids. Like, it's so cute.
They open up. Yeah.
That's right.
And also, we are so blessed that we had this tool to be able to navigate this process, these experiences. Through lucid dreaming, through dreams, through whatever, you know, and connecting with each other. And like, you know, Steven was talking, he talks to other parents and guys that they open up to him, you know, because, oh, he can relate to them. So they find a comfort zone right there, a comfort place that they can go and talk to. This is like a blessing, you know, to be able to become aware of this so we can help others.
So amazing.
Thank you, Amina.
Thank you, guys. It's been such a great conversation. I respect you guys so much as parents and as my friends and fellow dreamers. And, you know, I've always wanted to have kids. Like, I've kind of always thought about this my whole life, you know, not ready yet in any sort of sense. But I definitely, like, look forward to the awesome, like, experiences and the love capacity that you guys talked about. It's really inspiring. So,
yeah, bring us
back. Thank you.
Do a second episode.
Yeah, let's do it, you guys. We could do this anytime you guys want. It's been so awesome. And I love keeping the conversation going. So we'll definitely have to check back in.
Thank you.